Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
This pitching is not in a good place mentally. At all.
Fucker. I feel like it was son of a bitch.
Your fucking blowjob.
I'm following last month's sellout live show. The Drunk Women are at it again. Come and see them live at the Pleasance Theatre in London on the 6th of December 2018, where they'll be joined by Susie Ruffle and London Hughes.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
We are joined this week by the fantastic Annabelle Port, author, presenter, co-host of the podcast Adrift with Jeff Lloyd. And Annabelle is the author of the book called Annabelle Versus the Internet. Welcome, Yay! Annabelle! Yay!
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for coming. We would like to kick off the podcast. If you could, Annabelle, tell us the time you've been the victim of a crime.
Okay, yes, I want to tell you about the time that I was taken hostage.
What?
Yeah, I was taken hostage by a pigeon.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean, oh? What do you mean, oh?
I was hoping this was going to be really traumatic.
Okay,
sorry.
Not even a goose, a pigeon.
So I was, I needed to buy a greetings card. I think it was a birthday card. So I went into a branch of Cards Galore. Do you know, familiar with that? The greetings
so,
card.
Yes, so good.
Yeah. So I went in there and it was just me. And then there was the two girls that worked there who were young. They were like between 16 and 18. And I was their senior by quite some years. I think I was in my early 30s at the time. So quite some years.
Okay.
And I was just browsing for a card. You know, you want to pick a nice one, don't you? People, you know, judge you by the card you send. Yeah, so I spend some time looking for a card. And then a pigeon flies through the open door and starts flapping about very, very aggressively. Like, this pigeon is not in a good place mentally at all. or physically, really. Like, it's a greetings card shop. And he's really flapping about. And it's absolutely terrifying because it was quite a small shop and it's, like, really kind of, like, going towards our faces.
Ooh,
and, like, getting...
Wow.
The young teenage girls are terrified, as am I. But they're looking to me as their senior for help. And so I think we need to get out. So I say, head for the exit. time one of us heads for the exit, the pigeon goes there and blocks our way and starts flapping and like he won't let us out. He's texting. He has actually taken us hostage. I don't know why. I don't know whether the feds were after him or something. I never found out why he held us hostage, but he did.
Oh my God.
So I was there for quite some time and it was really terrifying. And like there was one point when I thought I could probably make a break for it now on my own.
And he's distracted with these young people.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't leave these young girls, could I? Like, what if they were pecked to death or what if one got Stockholm syndrome?
You know who it was though?
Who?
It was FunkyPigeon.com because they they are the card guys, right?
Yes.
So he was like advertising.
Never it was a very bad advert.
This is a meme that went wrong.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, just be glad it wasn't Moonpig Man, because that guy that guy decapitates people. Yeah.
He will eat your face.
But you'd be glad to know there wasn't a tragic ending. Obviously, I'm still here today.
So what happened?
And I think in the end, I called for a broom. I said, have you got a broom?
Ah.
And I think we somehow ushered him out, you know. So it was a bit of a flat ending, to be honest. But yeah, I was once held hostage by a pigeon in Cards Galore.
Yeah.
And that was the crime that I was a victim of.
Wow. That is serious.
Pigeon crime. It sounds like you're good in a crisis, though.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, you weren't there.
Because I just would have...
I might have been overplaying my part slightly.
Well, you had two suggestions. I would have just screeched.
I'd still be in the shop right now.
I love that in a crisis doors become exits.
Make for the exit. I didn't say go, I was like make for.
We're in Die Hard, people.
Do you know, in West Quay, which was a shopping centre in Southampton, I learned this. I suppose it's in all shopping centres, is they often do get pigeons and birds and stuff flying to the shopping centre, can't get out.
Mm.
Often they'll get like a guy with a falcon or something like that to come in, and the falcon will come and it will attack and kill the pigeons and take the pigeons out.
Do you know
out.
What? I thought it was going to be, and then the bird follows the falcon out. They all get out safely.
Make for the exit. Like,
it's like guided him towards the exit.
Ripped its neck out. No, I don't know if it does that. But
so we should all carry on falcons with us if we go to Cards Galore.
Yeah! Cards Galore needs a falcon.
Yeah, that's what we've learned from this.
That's the take home.
Although you could call yourself the falcon from now on.
Yes, because I was the falcon, kind of. Okay, just call me the falcon. Thank you.
I need a broom. Give it to her. She's the falcon.
The falcon needs a broom. Get it.
I do feel for this pigeon. I have to say, not to like get on the perpetrator's side or anything.
Why?
Just because I'm wondering what the hell was going on with it. Like, it was obviously it was traumatized by something and it was trying to tell us something.
It's probably just been pecking on a pool of diarrhea or something like that. They normally do. It's probably traumatized by
LSD.
That.
Pecking on a pool of diarrhea.
You're right.
Sorry.
Never feel bad for a pigeon.
That's very poetic, actually.
I won't write the poem. I'll let you do it.
But like one of the things we ask people on this podcast when they tell us their stories is what would you say?
What would you say to that pigeon?
Oh.
But I,
yeah, what would I say to it? I would say, stay calm in future.
Sound.
Don't go near Cards Galore. And stop pecking on that diarrhea.
Yeah.
There you go.
I would have led with stop pecking on that diarrhea. Like in terms of like life advice.
Yeah, true.
I'd say stop eating shit.
That can apply to everyone as well, can't it? Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's what I would say. Stop pecking on pools of diarrhea.
That's nice.
That's just good life advice.
Yeah.
Another crime solved.
Hey!
Thank you.
I feel like we just landed Cards Galore as a sponsor too. It's a second recording. We don't make enough of them because we get to the second one and like I've had so much ale. Thanks, Brewdog. Your punk IPA is making me act like a punk.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Okay, on October the 27th, a person dies in the National Stomach Hospital.
Sorry, that's not funny.
That's not a thing, is it?
Yeah, it just sounds
it
like a
thing. It is a thing.
Really?
We're going to hear a lot more about
it. Is there a hospital for every body part?
Yeah. That I'm not
National
qualified
Spleen
to answer.
Hospital. Okay, sorry.
I mean,
I was about to say, like an eye hospital, which actually exists. We all know that exists, yeah.
It's October 27th. A person has died in the National Stomach Hospital after a 2-month struggle with toxemia.
Mm.
The cause of death, now there has been a slight clue there, is heavy metal poisoning. Party on, Wayne! Okay, so the autopsy revealed tremendous arsenic levels. Based on nothing, do we think that this is a male or female dead body?
Based on nothing. Okay. Based on nothing.
That's how I like to start my case.
It's a man poisoned by a woman.
Okay, Nice guess. Any advance on that?
I'm going to totally agree with that. Okay. Yeah.
I also like the expression tremendous arsenic levels. Absolutely. Oh, gosh, they were tremendous.
So it's so impressive.
Oh,
tremendous.
They killed him in an instant.
Dr. Morgan, come here. Oh, it's tremendous.
Okay. So
much arsenic.
I can reveal that Taylor is correct.
Oh.
And therefore, so are you.
Yes. I copied her. I copied her work.
Don't make a habit of it.
Okay.
Not consistent.
Okay.
This is third. Sorry, I'm just at that level. I can read.
No.
Ferdinand Alfonsi, and he is a poor Italian day labourer. Where does this take place? Now, if you know your stomach hospitals, that's an easy question.
Yes. I figured it was London, but...
Nuh-uh,
because that...
But he was Italian. Mm-hmm. Is that a clue?
Oh, New York? Is it New York?
Is it Italy?
No.
Uh-oh.
Should I just keep saying cities? No, I don't have it.
Paris. No.
Oh.
Berlin.
They've got a fine stomach hospital.
It's Italian.
It is. Rome. Pennsylvania.
Hey. Hey, I'm from Pennsylvania.
Oh, and you didn't know about the stomach
hospital.
What
city is it in, though? Philadelphia, probably.
Yes,
it is
Philadelphia, oh, Pennsylvania. Okay, what year is this?
1899.
Taylor's going with that. Any advance on that?
Yeah, I think 1899. That's just a guess.
I mean, arsenic is old school, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
okay,
I'm thinking probably. I'm going to go 1901 for a little bit of colour, a little bit of fun.
Okay, Hannah is the closest.
Yes.
It is 1938.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's downright modern, Wilkins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It's October 27th, 1938. Someone's died, Philadelphia, poor Italian day labourer. Okay. So far, so what? Enter our three police detectives, not us, to crack the case wide open. It's Michael Schwartz, Anthony Franchetti, Samuel Riccardi. They happen to be investigating similar deaths and therefore examine the autopsy results with great interest, since it confirmed their suspicion that Alfonsi's death was neither an isolated incident nor accidental. Alfonsi, they believed, was the victim of an organised arsenic murder ring operating in Philadelphia and preying on hapless Italian immigrants.
Oh, man. Oh.
Hapless, no.
They're hapless. Yeah. And I shall tell you for why.
Okay.
Basically, they just can't write. Some of them will read.
Oh. Call that literate.
And, well, there's other reasons that we shall get to.
It's a bit harsh.
Yeah, it does seem a bit, doesn't it? So, I've had some common sense.
Miss Toddler is hapless.
So put this in context in a way that sounds less racially charged.
Okay.
Yes.
Fun fact. In the 1930s, Philadelphia, the Italian community had grown from 76,734 in 1910 to over 155,000 by 1930. So they had a huge influx of Italian immigrants.
Build the wall.
And a lot of them didn't speak English or could read or write. And they were coming to work. And there was also a lot more of a superstitious kind of element to how they operated, which got preyed upon.
They were horribly persecuted.
Yes, and loads of racism. It's America, sure. like Britain can talk.
Yeah, right.
We do
it better.
Do we, at this point, do we think that the perp or perps are male or female?
Oh, I thought you had confirmed it was female, or were you just confirming that first guess?
Just
that it was
the, just at the
well,
dead
now,
body.
If it's an organised group, I'm not so sure.
I'm hoping it's an organised group of women, and I love the fact you use the word perps. I love the word perps. Thank you for that. I wanted to be a group of women.
Okay.
Yeah. So in an ideal world.
The women are killing everyone.
Yeah. Just to make a change.
It is weird though, isn't it, that organised crime is often men.
Yeah.
Like, women are good at organising. Like,
yes,
we can like multitask. We can like... Yeah.
They let us clean up the meeting rooms when they finished organising the crime.
Yeah, there are often supportive wives behind that.
Pretending not to know anything.
Yeah, I'm going to go with like supportive wives.
I think it's men.
Okay.
But it's men.
Well, now, there are some women involved, which we'll get to. And there is a woman suspect, which we'll also get to. But this is a crime gang, which is headed by these two male Italian immigrant cousins, Herman and Paul Petrillo. And they immigrated in 1910. They got in on the ground floor before everybody else came. They got in early, and these are some bad guys.
So they're Italian.
They're Italian.
Preying on Italians.
Yes.
Oh, no.
And they, right, also, they are using poison to kill. This is toxic masculinity.
Oh, boy.
That was terrible, and you may all now punch me in the face. I'm so sorry.
Did you say their names were Herman and Paul?
Yes.
Do you think Paul was jealous of Herman's name or vice versa?
I feel like, good question.
Yeah, I think Herman got the short straw, didn't he, there?
Now, they didn't... They had an official front to their business. We're going to just get all the stereotypes out of the way now. Their legit business was selling pasta, spaghetti, etc.
Oh, we should have got to guess that. Like,
I should have done.
You showed us up.
Yeah. We could have really
I was
trying
to like food. I was like, it's a food.
Like, no, exactly. Yeah. We would get told to rewrite that in a script. We're like such hack Italian. So over the next 15 months, the Philadelphia police and the district attorney's office uncovered an intricate, bizarre tale of conspiracy, serial murder, fraud, witchcraft, and even Satanism centered in Philadelphia's Italian community. But I'm not going to be able to cover all that in the time that we have. But I can tell you that the arsenic ring employed an unusual method in selecting its victims. What do you think that was? And I have given you some clues.
Okay. We said something about the poor uneducated amongst them.
Mm-hmm. They had to be hapless.
They had to be hapless. Yeah. That's a given.
And they couldn't read or write, so they didn't do it via books.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Strategically placed books near them.
Okay, so I'm narrowing it down. Sorry, okay. bear with me.
Typically, the members of this gang, posing as faith healers and witch doctors, would offer services to vulnerable and superstitious Italian immigrants seeking medical or spiritual care. After securing a person's confidence, the ring member would insure the individual's spouse or relative, poison the target, and collect the money from the insurance policies after the victim died, sometimes with the family not even knowing that that has happened.
Oof.
Wow.
A lot of the immigrants didn't speak English, so sometimes the policies were made out to these criminals to collect the money. It's not even made out to them.
No.
And so the victims had just signed with an X or something, and they didn't even know what it said. So it's a nasty, sad business. So what do we think helped them crack this case? What was their big break that helped them going forwards?
Did one of them go to a witch doctor? So it's a witch doctor.
Yes, that's one of the guises that they take. So they're kind of infiltrating. Another way that they did it, which I'll get to, but I'll just tell you this now, and then I won't have to read this word for word, is they would, some of the, like, there'd be Italian women that would need abortions, and they'd get referred to this doctor. They had an official physician on their team of witch doctors, and he would do the abortions, and then he would blackmail them to, wow. I'm going to tell everyone you've had an illegal abortion.
Whoa.
Or you have to take an insurance policy out and give somebody in your family this poison type of thing. So it was they kind of just would prey on everybody any way they could.
So just basically vulnerable people, people who believe in witch doctors and need abortions.
Or just needed abortions.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I think that's a really good reason why abortions should stay legal, because otherwise women are just going to have to kill their husbands to get abortions.
It's a compelling argument.
That's a great picket. That's a great picket. Yeah. Nothing happened.
It's the slogan.
Keep it legal or we'll kill our husbands.
Yeah, if it affects men, then people
then
will
start
to
give a
take
shit.
Notice.
Yeah. This affects all of us.
Wait. But how did they crack the case, you asked us?
Yes.
I mean, people are turning up dead from poison.
And it's looking not suspicious until... I'll just tell you.
Okay.
basically, there's an informant. They did no police work whatsoever. Somebody just came and told them.
Oh, okay.
And what do you think how do you think they treated the informant?
Killed them. Oh, sorry.
Good guess.
Oh, thank you.
Did they torture her for information?
How do you think the police...
Not if they came
so
to them.
Somebody came to the police and said, look, there's some dodgy stuff happening. You got to look into this. What do you think the police's response to that was?
We're busy.
Yes.
Seriously?
Wow. Yeah. George Meyer is the informant. He comes forward. He's the owner of an upholstery cleaning business. In June 1938, George Meyer gets released from jail. They don't say why he was in jail, because he's supposed to be running a cleaning business. Mm. And he needs $25 to start his business. Okay, so he's pre-business. Anyway, he approached Herman Petrillo for a loan. Petrillo, and as we know, that's one of the killers. Mm. Petrillo instead offered him his choice of $600 cash or $2,500 in counterfeit dollars if he will kill Alfonsi. So as we know, Alfonsi is the dead guy in the hospital, in the stomach hospital.
Mm. I'm no financial expert, but that's a big discrepancy.
Yeah.
$600 or my fist up your ass. No, just kidding. $200,000. Counterfeit.
Wants him to kill him by hitting him in the head with a lead pipe and throwing him down a flight of stairs. Petrillo explained to Meyer that the death must resemble an accident so that a double indemnity premium could be collected from Alfonsi's insurance company.
So he said make it look like an accident, but smash him around the head with a lead pipe.
Yeah, for some reason he thinks smashing him with a lead pipe and then him falling downstairs looks like an accident.
He was hapless though, so they're so, like, yeah.
Hapless people are always falling downstairs.
And smashing lead pipe, exactly. Yeah.
You're promoted, Annabelle.
Thank you.
So Meyer accompanied Petrillo to the Alfonso household, but ultimately refused to commit the crime. So he turns informant and approached the Philadelphia police regarding Petrillo's murder proposal, but they ignored him, believing that he suffered from, and I quote, an overactive imagination.
Well, and he wasn't even a woman. That's the
kind
of thing.
He wasn't even a woman.
They would immediately say about a woman.
No, that is anti-Italian prejudice.
Just as bad.
So then Meyer contacted William A. Landovich, head of the United States Secret Service branch in Philadelphia. And although this guy is skeptical about Meyer's story, he discovered that Petrillo was wanted for counterfeiting and bootlegging and assigned agent Stanley B. Phillips to the case. So Phillips, the new detective assigned to the case, goes undercover, because obviously that's the first thing you have to do.
With that Italian name, Phillips.
Yeah. And he established his cover as a professional assassin, met with Petrillo, and told him that he'd be willing to fulfill the contract. They discussed various methods of murdering the Italian labourer, including drowning him, hitting him with an automobile, bludgeoning him with a metal pipe, or preferably a sandbag, which supposedly left little to no trace of impact and resembled a brain hemorrhage. Yay! That's a great one.
If anybody's listening to the podcast for tips on how to murder, that's a great one. I've never heard
We haven't talked
before.
About sandbagging. Oh, wait, I think... Hang on. Wait.
Wow. I mean, we have.
I think autopsies have moved on slightly since then, though. Like,
I think...
Sorry if you were planning ahead.
This is very much a 1930s way of getting away with a crime.
Yeah.
Petrillo allegedly supplied Meyer with a tailored black sandbag for the occasion.
A black sandbag?
Why is it black?
That's pretty sexy, isn't it?
Did you say tailored?
Yes.
Wow. Made to measure. Yeah. Impressed. His initials were in gold on it
or
something.
So fancy. It's the fanciest murder weapon.
Yeah. It had like a tuxedo design on it.
This is really classy.
It is so classy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, so whatever the method chosen to kill Alphonse, Philip's primary objective was to solicit counterfeit money from Petrillo, because then he could prosecute him for that.
Right.
So while agreeing to fulfill the contract on Alphonse in exchange for the $500, Philip simultaneously attempted to buy counterfeit currency. Petrillo, however, had problems securing additional counterfeit money, delaying the deal for 3 weeks. During the transaction, Phillips pressed Petrillo about the Alfonso contract. Petrillo informed Phillips and Meyer that the murder would no longer be necessary because Alfonso had been admitted to the hospital and was seriously ill. Mm. Myers quoted Petrillo as stating the, and I'm quoting this, expletive deleted in source, must have 9 lives because we gave him enough arsenic to kill 6 men.
Ooh, let's guess the expletive, shall we?
That is literally what I was about to say. What do we think it was?
Fucker.
I feel like it was son of a bitch because it's like, you know, the 1930s. But also, watching The Sopranos, I feel like it's probably going to be like cunt or something.
I remember hearing once an what was it? I think it was on Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, and somebody called somebody said, "You fucking blowjob."
Wow! Oh my god!
Isn't it? So I think you're fucking blowjob.
Yeah, it could be. It's like a loving sexual act.
I can't. I do it.
I gave a fucking cunnilingus.
Another mystery solved by the drunk women.
Are we right? Oh, you don't know.
I really don't know because it's deleted by the source.
Oh.
Because in the 1930s, they gave a shit about swearing, but not women or minorities. I mean, nothing's changed. Secret Service agents remained dubious about the murder conspiracy, but they arrested Petrillo and charged him with counterfeiting. By this time, however, Philadelphia detectives Schwartz, Franchetti, and Riccardi, the guys we met at the beginning, had learned of Meyer's story and arrested the spaghetti salesman. That's Petrillo. They're just adding a bit of colour. On September the 27th for attempted murder. Now, this is where we get our female perp.
Oh, nice.
Great. Great.
Female and perp. I'm so happy.
keep going.
So Alphonse's wife, Stella, had been arrested as well, but the police were forced to release both her and Petrilli because they failed conclusively to establish their guilt at a magistrate's hearing. Why do we think this was as well? Just like, why do you think they might have been released on September 27th?
Oh.
And we know that he dies on October 27th.
Just because he's not dead yet?
Yes.
Ah.
So it's just...
I could be a magistrate.
Yeah, so it's just attempted murder at this point.
Ah.
Which is a crime. Well, it is a crime, but they don't give a shit. So,
which is a crime.
But like, that's just
don't make it work. This has been Katie Wilkins on murder.
This is not serious. It's just attempted murder. It was September. He's still fighting for his life, poor little Alphonse, in that stomach hospital. And then in October, he dies. Phew, now it's a crime. His death provides the necessary evidence against the couple, and police arrested them a second time. So Mrs. Alphonse was the beneficiary of several policies from the Home Life Insurance Company, totaling $8,250, which was a lot of money in the 1930s. Curiously, the detectives learned from interviews with Alphonse, poor little dying Alphonse, just before his death, that he had been unaware of owning any insurance.
I'm starting to put something together here. Okay, keep going.
Vulcan's on it. She's swooping in!
She certainly is. Keep going.
He had applied for coverage several times, but each time a response arrived in the mail, his wife informed him that he'd been rejected. So Alphonse was in no position to question his wife's veracity because he was unable to read English. So she was lying to him.
Oh, boy.
Are you allowed to take out loads of life insurance?
You were in the 1930s. They then did decide to close the loops a little bit. The detectives start looking into similar cases, Italian immigrants, double indemnity, etc. And the insurance companies are very happy to help them because they can get out of paying the money. So curious and interesting things emerge from these files. With all these deaths, the attending physicians had typically classified the deaths of normal policyholders as one of 3 illnesses, pneumonia, gastroenteritis, or heart attack. But on the other hand, if the insured happened to own a policy with a double indemnity clause, the subject's death was usually more violent. And then, hooray, poor little Alfonso's autopsy report furnished the answers as to why these illnesses were blamed. Large amounts of arsenic were present in his corpse, but because arsenic is an inorganic metallic compound, it is virtually undetectable when slipped into someone's food or drink. While minute traces of arsenic are always present in the body, larger quantities are obviously extremely lethal. After a person ingests the poison, it accumulates in most of the body's vital organs, including stomach, lungs, liver, and kidneys. As the various organs become engorged, their tissue degenerates, which can result in an abdominal distentation and inflammation.
Stomach lung hospital.
Congestion. Obviously, you need to go to the stomach hospital. Wow. Fever, diarrhea, and of course, excruciating pain, which made the deaths look like pneumonia, etc. But although the ring members believed that arsenic was, as they called it, a miracle drug because of its deadly effects and the ease of secretly administering it to a victim through food or drink, they failed to consider that the poison is metallic substance which will not decompose. So police, therefore, only had to exhume the remains of suspected victims and submit them to chemical analysis to find the incriminating physical. So they only had to, all they had to do, you guys, was just dig up. They only had to exhume shitloads of corpses. That's all they had. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. That's all they had to do. So they got together a crack team to dig up the corpses, which comprised of physicians, chemists, pathologists, toxicologists, and even undertakers. This is grim.
Yeah.
It is grim, isn't it?
Yeah. And they made a huge case. There were loads of cases, the details of which we do not have time for now. Okay. Yeah. Some of the reports that I read, the Petrillo cousins actually formed a matrimonial agency during the 1930s to help widowed women remarry and get life insurance policies for their new
homes. Oh, man.
Whoa. So I don't know. I couldn't. There was so much about this online. I couldn't.
I feel like I dated a Petrillo. It's bringing back some memories.
It's bringing you a lot of food and drink.
Yeah.
So others were women dissatisfied with their marriages, looking for romance-type Viagra, basically, for their local witch doctor. Although some of the wives knew that, and this is called La Fatura, a love potion, was really a deadly poison. Others had been told that it was actually a stronger love potion that was... They didn't know that it was fatal. So after the husband died, the widow maintained her silence for fear that she would be indicted as an accomplice in the murder, since she had sort of had prior knowledge of the substance's possible effects. And all she was trying to do was get her end away.
Oh.
This isn't what I meant by stiff. Hey. The falcon, she's combusting.
Sorry. I'll gain my poise. Focus. Let's go. Oh.
Just knowing who to prey on, though, like, okay, well, here's a target market. Women who need abortions. Here's a target market. Women who want to help their husbands with their problems. Like, just really, like, finding every angle. Petrillo!
I mean, they really cornered the market.
I mean, really did.
Very enterprising.
Really
enterprising.
Really very clever. Very clever.
Final twist. Herman Petrillo was actually having an affair with Stella Alfonsi, the little hospital guy's wife.
Why do you keep calling him little? By the way. Poor little Alfonsi. Like, was he a small man? Are you just minimizing the dead?
You know what? I'm just patronizing him. But in my head, it's affectionate.
So Stella was having
an affair with Herman Petrillo.
With Petrillo.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. I mean, he's a risky guy to do it with.
Yeah. So, the poor little dead guy at the hospital. Poor big guy at the hospital.
I'm not sure that makes it any better, can you say? Okay.
Here is my question for you three cops.
Okay.
Do you think that Stella was found guilty or not guilty when it went to trial?
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. Now you're stumped.
I think not guilty. I think she got away with it.
Not guilty.
That's my guess.
Annabelle, yes. Nice guess, nice guess.
Any maybe she didn't even definitely do it. I mean, do we think she definitely did it? Because, it doesn't have to necessarily mean that she did.
Oh,
it.
Maybe Herman wanted to get rid of him because he wanted Stella all to himself. Oh. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I think it might be Herman. So I think that the very reasonable people at the police department realised that maybe it wasn't her.
Okay. And what do you think, Taylor?
Well, I'm just thinking along other lines that I know they're investigating all this, but I feel like there has to be a corrupt sector of the police department that are getting paid off by the Petrillos. Like, they're organized crime. That's the first thing they go for is they get people on their side. Sure. So I just feel like they would either make her go down for it so that they have a pawn,
or
they protect her. Depends how good she is in bed, frankly.
Interesting.
How good she is at sandbagging.
You gotta aim it right.
I can now reveal that Annabelle and Hannah are correct. She was found not guilty.
Oh,
She was successfully defended by the brilliant advocate Raymond Alexander Pace. I do not know how he did it. There is no more information on that subject. Okay. Do you think the Petrillo cousins were found guilty or not guilty?
Well, I mean, what you're saying about the police there, I think not guilty. I think they got away with it, yeah.
Interesting, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do an Annabelle and go with Annabelle.
Conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Sure, I think so.
I align with Annabelle.
Okay. You are all fired.
No. Oh. I'm sorry, everyone.
They're very responsible.
Yeah, they were convicted of first-degree murder.
Wow.
They were executed by electric chair
in
1941. In fact, at his trial, Herman Petrillo, on the March the 22nd, when the jury returned a guilty verdict with a surprising recommendation that he be sentenced to death, he was so enraged by what he perceived as a miscarriage of justice, Petrillo attempted to attack the jury.
Oh my God.
He had to be restrained by four bailiffs who physically led him from the courtroom. Always a good look, that, I think. So a total of 14 people from the Petrillo cousins gang were sentenced to life imprisonment. Herman and Paul both went to electric chair. We solved the crime! Yay!
Drunk women solving crime.
This listener crime from, let's say, Rebecca.
Did you forget to ask her if you can use the real name?
Yes.
Right,
okay, yeah.
I like it.
It's more of a moral quandary. It is a crime, though.
Okay.
She says, I work in a hotel bar, and every now and then my co-worker keeps just drinking the drinks behind in the back bit where no one can see, or sometimes where people can see. The odd beer or... The odd beer or WKD. Is that WKD? That's a drink, right?
Sure.
Oh,
sure.
You're showing yourself to be of a certain age there, aren't you?
Is that a drink?
Well, I know it's, but then I suddenly panicked that I've got the letters the wrong way around.
Or you should call it...
Yeah, it's supposed to be wrong.
It's supposed to... My friend's mum called In Excess Inksy.
That's really good.
A bit like that.
That's me. I'm your friend's mum. And I can't work the TV anyway. So
isn't it supposed to look like Wicked? Isn't that the whole...
Yes. So I have got it the right way around.
Yeah.
This is why copy paste is dangerous. But then, yeah, it's basically bottled drinks is what we should take from that part of this thing. At first, I assumed we must be allowed to do that. But now our manager has noticed.
Must be able to help yourself.
Yeah. All right, okay. And says it's a problem.
I'm 12 and I work in a bar. I don't really understand commerce.
And he says it's a problem that stock is unaccounted for. I don't know what to do. Ooh. What should we tell Rebecca to do?
I feel bad because I have also done this.
Ooh.
Not in a bar. When I was a teenager and worked in a news agency,
yeah.
I used to go around the back and pretend that I was like getting stuff from the stock room, and I'd be shoving penny sweets in my mouth. Nice. Yeah, terrible. Nice.
It's a victimless crime.
Since closed down that news agency, but no.
It's not going to be the penny sweet margin.
Yeah. We're a penny away from bankruptcy.
I know, all those fried eggs I had and white mice. So I'm not sure I'm in a position to give any advice, seeing as I've also committed this crime. I don't know.
Well, this is it. So our advice could be keep shtim. Keep shtim, love.
Did you say it's a chain? Because then like, you don't care, do you? But if it's a small independent, you do.
I don't think it's a chain.
Okay.
But she didn't say.
Do we know how old this chap is that's stealing the boots?
I've got the impression they're all in their early 20s because they're working in a bar.
Because the thing is, if he was like in his 50s and still drinking WKD, I'd respect him enough. I'd be like, do you know what? You're a man that likes the sweeter things in life.
You've made a choice and we salute you.
Yeah, I would. Listen up, listeners. The next time you see somebody over 50 drinking a WKD, go up to them, shake their hand and take a picture and send it in to us. Because I'm going to buy my dad a WKD this weekend. And I'm just going to be like, Dad, we posed with this because it's just, you know.
One Christmas, I once saw my dad drinking an Alco Pop and it was called Green Fairy. And it was an Alco Pop that had absinthe in it. Wow. I'm not sure they still sell it, but yeah, my dad in his 70s.
In the 90s, there were so many Alco Pops and they came and went.
Right, it must have been around then. Yeah,
there was Hooch, but then there was all these Green Fairy things.
Yes, yeah.
But the dilemma is, should write by the business and tell them, or make somebody lose their job over some minor I mean, possibly major expressions. Yeah.
Maybe this guy, though. Maybe he's really starting the party. Like, he's a bit drunk. He's like, and he's on the bar and everyone's doing shots because of him. And he's actually bringing in more business because he's got the party started.
Yes. Mm. He's a party stimulator.
That's a possibility.
That's good for business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's probably generating more money than he's stealing.
Exactly. It's an investment. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's out gone.
It's an investment in fun days.
Exactly. It's like how pimps sleep with the prostitutes. Yeah. It's funny because my moralistic side is like, of course you tell on them because that's wrong because that's stealing. But I know if I were in that situation, I'd be like, I'm uncomfortable, but yeah. I'm not going to do
it's
anything.
It's hard, right?
Also, is it stealing if you don't know it's stealing?
Well, so she didn't know, but now she does know.
No, but him.
Because do you think he thinks it's okay?
Well, him drinking it in the back makes me think he knows it's wrong. Yeah. But him drinking it in the front, as you say.
Yeah.
Well, in full view of everyone.
Yeah, it's like, is he doing that? Because also, I've worked in bars, and when it's busy or everyone's having a great time, there is, and have one yourself, love.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so is there an element that he's having his one himself?
Yeah, yeah.
Or Katie, like, what? Are you Rebecca?
I think we're all Rebecca.
Maybe he thinks he's an advert. Like, well, his advertising is like a marketing tool. Like, look how fun and great I look.
Like, it's either that or it's like no one's around, so he's out the front drinking it. And then when the manager comes back, he's out the back, you know, like, what?
I remember I worked in a bar for about a week. How good I was at it. But I remember, yeah, it was a thing of if someone says, oh, and have one for yourself, they're always like, oh, we just add a quid on to the bill.
Yeah, and then you split it at the end.
Fucking quid, that's not a drink, isn't it?
No,
sort of
I would always take 2.20.
Very specific.
Yeah. That was a shot at the time, I think. Oh, I don't know. I had my reasons. It was...
But I always thought if somebody says, oh, and have one yourself, it'd be offensive, like, because that suggests you're just going to have a lemonade.
Do you think people still say that? Do you have one yourself? I don't know.
Yeah, they did in where I worked.
Okay.
But it wasn't very salubrious, so they did say it.
Yeah, certainly not in London. You'd be bankrupt by the time days.
Like have a £9 gin and tonic. And have one yourself. Oh, wait, we're bankrupt.
I would have a word with the person first.
Confront them.
And just
them.
Say, yes, that's good.
Yeah, and just be like, look, I don't want to make a big thing of this. Yeah. I don't have a problem. It's just I keep catching you doing it.
Yeah,
and,
I think maybe we're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, do you want to come forward or stop?
I've bought you this bottle of booze that you can sip from if that makes you
like, in the toilets.
I got you some toilet bourbon.
Yeah, made some toilet hooch. More welcome to
laugh. Although I do think that's the answer, yeah. Don't get them sacked. That's been
They need this job. Yeah. They're an alcoholic.
Exactly, yeah.
I think we've been a really big help to Rebecca.
Genuinely, sadly, probably the most helpful we've ever been.
Right, we just give an alcoholic more alcohol. So, I mean, we've not done great here.
Just delay his rock bottom, cushion that landing. There you go, Rebecca. Is there anything you would like to plug, Annabelle? Your marvellous book.
Oh, yes, please, yes. So I've got a book out at the moment, and it's called Annabelle versus the Internet.
I love it already.
Thank you. Well, then I won't say anything more. And you can get it on Amazon and some bookshops, not many.
So is it out already?
Oh, yeah, it's out in April.
Oh, wicked.
Yes, yes. And you can buy it. I think it's around about £7.50.
Very reasonable.
And some people have enjoyed it. Excellent. Including my mother and my father. Ooh. So there you go.
That's the big one. That's the big one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, are you fighting the internet physically?
Or? Well, you actually want to know. That's okay. Oh, okay. So I used to do a radio show with Jeff Lloyd, who I now do a podcast with.
Yes.
And he used to set me different challenges every week.
Ah.
And it started off because he thought I was a complete Luddite because I wouldn't join Twitter. Yes, because I thought it was just people, you know, doing pictures of their dinner and stuff. And
Which it largely is.
And it's like really racist on top of that.
Like, you're not wrong.
I just didn't get it. I didn't get it at all.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so I was refusing it, and he said I was a Luddite, even though at the time I think I owned a PS3, a microwave. Like, I wasn't a Luddite. I had a mobile phone. Outrageous. Like, digital camera.
Not your first attempt.
So he started challenging me to beat the internet. So each week initially, so the first one was Twitter. He said, well, if you think you're better than Twitter, do your own Twitter page offline. So I had my own dead letter drop where I had a Twitter page hidden in a tree, a sort of sapling, on Carnaby Street. And some people came along and gave their little updates, including a dog, I remember, which was quite surreal. I'm assuming it was their owner.
Cool.
And then I did Facebook, celebrity gossip sites, Google Images, all the different sort of major website things. And then when we'd run out of those, you just started setting other random things like become immortal and solve the world's economy and invent some new clothing. And I did them all.
Wow.
And then I did loads of them. I did about 300 of them. And I thought, I think maybe 30 of them might be good enough for a book.
Cool.
So I did a book.
Oh man, that's so exciting.
I sort of want to know what,
I love
what
it.
Did the dog say?
What was the message?
Was the dog really sweet?
Update.
Unfortunately, I can't remember, so I don't think it was massively interesting. It might have been I had some win a lot or something, I don't know. So yes, the book and the podcast as well, Adrift, that I do with Jeff Lloyd. Which you can find wherever you find podcasts.
Available on Acast.
Yes, iTunes, Acast, wherever you get your podcasts, it's there.
Excellent.
Awesome.
And that's all we have done for. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast and thank you for listening. Bye!
And how's everyone else doing for drinks?
I'm good. Actually, pour some wine into my beer.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.